KLOS moved offices and we needed movers. We wanted real movers, real service, real rock and roll. So we called the guys at Real Rock and Roll Movers. These guys delivered rock solid service. If you're planning a move, residential, commercial, whatever, you gotta call the Real Rock and Roll Movers. Don't have room for all your stuff? Real Rock and Roll Movers even offer storage. You've seen their cool black skull moving trucks everywhere. That's them. RealRockandRollMovers.com. These guys know the meaning of rock.
The Lifers Podcast with Scott Lucas, Gabe Rodriguez, and Ben Reiser. And now, here's Scott, Gabe, and Ben.
Ben, you back from New York?
Back from New York.
Were you there for the high holidays?
I don't know. Is Passover a high holiday?
I don't know. Really know. I'm not part of the tribe.
Well, I was high and it was the holidays, so yes.
Were you there for 420? Because speaking of high holidays, 420 kind of came and went around here and we didn't even mention it.
I think I must have been there for 420. Yeah.
You know, Gabe celebrates 1020.
October 20th?
Nah, it's when you break a strawberry buttered Pop-Tart out at 10:20 a.m. You know, it's the best time to have, you know.
I did make my first ever THC purchases in New York. I finally was like, oh, I'm going to go to one of these joints.
How is it there? Because I've been to one with Ryan there, and it was a different experience.
Yeah, I didn't go to a bodega. There's you know, they sell stuff like at every corner store. You know, it's like.
Yeah,
cigarettes, candy bars, and weed.
I didn't do that.
Uh-huh. I went to an actual, more of a like boutique kind of joint.
Right,
it was very nice, very nice, yeah. And the prices were no worse than they are in Illinois, anyway.
But that's not like the one we went to. It was
dirt cheap.
It was a bit sketchier.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
It was like one rung up from, you know, going to the empty tenement and scoring crack.
Yeah. No, yeah. Literally, like, all those corner bodegas, like, those, like, you know, little grocery stores all now have added this to their roster of...
Lucy's and pot Sundays. Is what everyone's selling at the bodegas.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
okay. But I thought of you two guys, because I went to see a Broadway show.
Yeah, that's the first thing that comes to your mind when you're at a Broadway show is Gabe Rodriguez. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're seeing American Idiot.
No, I don't think that's still running, is it?
I think the American Idiot is still running. Yes, I don't know if he's going to win, but he is still running.
Now, I saw this show called Stereophonic.
Oh,
which is
okay. Tell us more.
It's a thinly veiled dramatization of the making of Fleetwood Mac's Rumours.
Ooh,
and it's 3 hours long. It's not a musical, although there are like all the actors actually who are playing the members of not Fleetwood Mac.
Okay.
Do play songs that are not.
So it's like that Daisy Ridley and the Six or whatever it is.
It's Fleetwood Mac and everything, but name only. But it all takes, it's one set. It all takes place in the recording studio, wherever they record. Where do they record Rumours? Like Sound City or whatever the place is in LA. So the set is the control room of the recording studio. And then through, you know, that's the front of the stage. And then there's halfway back to the stage is the glass. Yeah, there's the booth where they all... And so they keep coming into the studio and then going into the booth and playing stuff and coming back and listening to it. It's pretty great.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
So is this a real thing or is this like, you know, one step below Wicked? What's with me in one step and one...
One step beyond. Yeah. No, it's on Broadway and it's got rave reviews. I think it's going to be up for like a Tony or whatever.
It sounds great.
It might be the best play of the year, people are saying. So
I'd like to see this.
Yeah, next time you're in New York, you should go check it out.
This is, well, I'm never going back to New York, but this is, I mean, I thought you were going to bore the shit out of me, but this sounds great. What's Stereophonic?
Yeah, Stereophonic.
Okay. Well, you know what I did last weekend is I returned to the scene of the crime from 4 years ago. Gabe, you were there with me. Went to the Harvest Moon Drive-In. That's where we did the first outdoor drive-in concert. You remember,
the
first, Gabe?
The night one. Was that
and night two? Night one and two.
Okay.
The Harvest Moon Drive-In in Gibson City, Illinois. I was there to complete my Dawn of the Dead bucket list. So 2 years ago, I finally saw Dawn of the Dead in theater. Had you seen Dawn of the Dead in theater when you were growing up? You just heard it, right, Ben?
I know I did go to see it. So a couple years after its initial release, which I wasn't allowed to see and only listened to The Doors, then there was like a George Romero festival.
Oh, and then you saw it.
In Manhattan at some other theater, and I did see it there. And I've seen it several times in theater.
Okay, so that's you and your charmed life. But I was never able to see it. It was amazing. Pretty hard to see.
Yeah.
So a couple years ago, finally I see Dawn of the Dead at Music Box at a midnight screening. So that's perfect.
Was it 3D or just
2D? Well, see, here's the thing. That was 2D. So the next year, last year, I saw it in 3D. And that was playing at just like, you know, the Regal. Right. And it was like
the Regal Beagle.
The Regal Beagle. It was like, I think I was the only one in the theater. So I could run around looking at 3D. It was great. Yeah. And so then this last weekend, I finally saw it at the drive-in. And in the rain, no less. So I'm done. I've hit all the times. I've hit all the ways that I should be seeing Dawn of the Dead.
Well, let me ask you one other question. And this is an important one. Were any of these on 35? I know the 3D wasn't, but was the 2D at Music Box or was this weekend at the drive-in on film?
No. Oh, no.
Dude, your bucket list is still as...
Yeah, fuck you, man. I thought I had it. Wow. Okay, well, it's nice to have goals, but... Mm-hmm. It's at drive-ins this year for its 45th anniversary, and they're finally starting to loosen the reins on this movie because whoever's got, it's probably somebody from Laurel Entertainment or something.
It's that Richard Rubenstein, the lawyer.
It's been a bit of a C word as far as letting people see it, and I think he's finally starting to let it go.
Well, they're having this, whatever it is, 40th or 45th anniversary, and they're 45. Showing it all, 45, they're showing it all over the place, but I didn't see any listings for Wisconsin. So I said to Jim Healy, let's book it at Cinematheque for this summer because it's on tour anyway.
Right.
So he wrote to them and they're like, nah, there's a moratorium after June 1st for the next who knows how long.
It's going back into the vaults like Disney.
Going back into the vaults.
Well, so the Harvest Moon has two screens on opposite ends. So behind me, they were playing Psycho.
Oh, wow.
And so when it was raining like crazy, I mean, it was really coming down and I was super excited. I was like, this is the way I want to see it.
Yeah.
I kept turning around and watching Psycho, and I was switching back and forth on the radio between Psycho and Dawn of the Dead, and Psycho was kind of killing it, like especially with the rain. You know, when she's driving in the rain, she drives up to the Bates Motel. You've seen Psycho, right, Gabe?
Not really. I mean,
all right. Well, then I'm sorry I asked. Drives up to the Bates Motel, and I was like, I think I'd rather watch Psycho. I couldn't believe it, but Psycho was playing better on a drive-in. And it just got me thinking, it bothers me that Hitchcock seems kind of undervalued these days. Not underrated, but undervalued, right? Like nobody talks about him like they used to. And I get it, these things are cyclical, but Dawn of the Dead is maybe not better than fucking Psycho. And despite what Tarantino says, De Palma is not better than Hitchcock. And there's this ridiculous idea that Psycho 2 is better than Psycho. It's like, get the fuck out of here. Well, that's, you know, crazy.
Does Tarantino actually say De Palma is better than Hitchcock?
Tarantino knows more about movies than I'll ever know. I'm not trying to say that. But I think a lot of people might be taking their cue from... the cue from Q. And if that cue that they're taking is that Hitchcock isn't worth talking about, they're fucking up. They're fucking up, man. Psycho, Hitchcock's great.
It's great to watch the first half hour of Psycho and to think about people seeing that movie when it was first released.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's only one movie that threw me like that. Maybe two. But like I saw on its first run and it was like, something happens. There's a twist in a movie that I was like, what did I
Barbarian?
Just see? No, but that's pretty great. No, To Live and Die in L.A.
Okay, yeah. Uh-huh.
And that one comes at a, like, you know.
Right.
I don't want to say, but at an even crazier time in the movie.
What was the other one?
This wasn't quite the same thing, but I remember the original The Vanishing, you know, the
Oh, yeah.
I remember the movie ended, and I couldn't get out of my seat for like 20 minutes.
Oh, that's an amazing ending. Gabe, have you ever seen The Vanishing?
No, I haven't.
Okay, well, speaking of 45th anniversaries, Alien is also back in theaters.
Did you go?
I did. I went last night. Yeah. That's some bad editing, huh?
Was it the director's cut?
No, it was the original. And when those actors are on screen together, it's the best movie ever. Ever. You know, Yaphet Kotto, everything. Yeah. It's great. But the editing, it's kind of bad, no? Ridley Scott didn't know how to shoot an action scene to save his life. That whole section with Yaphet Kotto and Veronica Cartwright where they're getting killed. I'm watching this like, what's happening? What is going on? Or even that scene with the robot murder scene. Like, where is Ian Holm standing? You know, like, it's... I have this theory that he's trying to use the Jaws playbook, but it's not for the same reason Spielberg used it. You know, Spielberg knew ahead of time that his monster wasn't going to be able to work. Not really. It's not going to carry the day. So he uses cinema and cinema tricks to convey suspense. Editing, POV shots, music, Hitchcock stuff, right?
Yes.
He figures out the best way to shoot the shark, but Scott never figured out the best way to shoot the alien, you know? So he tries to cover it up with editing. He's like, just shoot the thing. We'll fix it in post. And there's all this sloppy stuff going on that after Harry Dean Stanton dies and they don't show them being... him being taken away, and the next scene they're talking about him being taken away. That's just
sloppy. I think that they did have to cut out some stuff because they weren't happy with the effects or something.
Right.
But
right.
There are two sequences in Alien that I think are as well edited and like suspenseful as anything else. The Tom Skerritt with the blowtorch.
Okay.
And the last stuff with Sigourney in the pod.
It's very good. That's very, very good. Yeah. I mean, it's still can't be denied. It's a pretty great movie, and it's very important to me. And
but you're an Aliens guy.
Aliens is still better. I went last night thinking Alien, this is going to be the time when I go on Ben Reiser's side. And it started, and I'm like, man, this is so great. I love this. And then I ran into the same problems that I had the last time. I'm like, this is just a mess in the middle. It feels like he's trying to save the movie in editing, and he's too exhausted to bother with coherence. He's like, I've had enough of this movie. Just here it is.
It's got those details. It's got the sound of the water on Harry Dean Stanton's cap and him tilting his head up to get
It's wet. Got H.R. Geiger stuff. I mean, it's all there. It's all great. Shout out to my Uber driver last night who was uber cool. And kept calling me Papa or Baba. I don't know. It was like a waitress from the South calling me darling. I was really into it. Speaking of cast of characters, when you Google Alien, the top on the list of the cast is the Xenomorph. Xenomorph is number one.
Jesus.
Played by Balaji Badejo.
We're living in an ain't it cool news world.
Number one, I mean, fuck that. Number one is Sigourney Weaver's underwear, right?
Amen.
I mean, that's top of the list. Gabe, have you seen Alien?
No, but Sigourney Weaver, maybe I should see it. I don't know.
Yeah.
Think so?
Oh, yeah. At least the last 10 minutes.
That underwear. Speaking of Sigourney Weaver's panties, that who is that underwear for? I mean, you know what I'm talking about? It's like, what the fuck is going on? I mean, I get it. I get what's going on. It's supposed to be provocative, and it is. When she does that strip thing, it's pretty cool, but who's wearing those panties? There's no coverage.
Is it a stunt double?
No. It's Sigourney Weaver's flat ass, but there's no coverage on that thing.
Well, it's not a thong. I mean,
it might as well be. It seems to be serving less of a purpose than a thong would be. Mm-hmm. Anyway, while Googling Sigourney Weaver's panties, Gabe, who's on the show today?
That's a good segue. That might be the best segue we've had in 3 years.
Yeah. Tonight's going to be a night of segues.
Someone's got to move those panties into place, you know.
Go on. Yeah, she wouldn't even do that. It's like, pull up your panties, Sigourney.
Wonder why women don't want to come on our show.
I don't wonder why, actually, but I just can't stop.
Today,
from repelling them.
Today we have Scott Quist.
Yes.
Who's Scott Quist, you might ask?
Yes.
The real rock and roll mover.
That's
a mover,
right.
And a shaker from Chicago, right. Originally.
Right.
Well, like Zurich.
Is he a road dog?
He is a road dog. Yes. But now he's a street dog now. He sort of keeps it localized in L.A. He's got a company called Real Rock and Roll Movers. Hit the theme song.
You may have heard that KLOS recently moved offices, and when we needed movers, we didn't want just any moving company. We wanted real movers, real service, real rock and roll. And that's why we called the guys at Real Rock and Roll Movers. These guys were amazing, from furniture disassembly and reassembly and full wrapping of all of our furniture. These guys delivered rock solid service with a real focus on customer service. And here's the fun fact. The Real Rock and Roll crew is made up largely of real working musicians. How cool is that? So if you're planning a move, residential or commercial, whatever, you got to check out the Real Rock and Roll Movers. You're going to see them all over SoCal in their cool Black Skull moving trucks. That's them. And for easy online booking and rates, all you have to do is go to realrockandrollmovers.com, realrockandrollmovers.com. Call the Real Rock and Roll Movers. These guys know the meaning of rock.
The Real Rock and Roll Movers. So he's going to be on the show today, and he used to be Brian St. Clair's drum tech, so maybe we'll get him to talk about that if Gabe doesn't.
My biggest memory of Scott on film.
Yes.
Is he was the one that gets to play the one note on Hands on the Bible.
That's
on
him.
There Went the Zoo DVD.
That's the guy. That's the one.
If anybody has that, you can see him playing the extra instrument.
Stop listening to this episode right now. Go watch your copy of There Went the Zoo. Go to Hands on the Bible. That's him. Keep it in your mind. Now imagine a beard. Press play.
Most recently released on VHS, right?
Yeah.
Still a few copies left out there.
Of course, it's 1986. So let's get back to Sigourney Weaver's
panties.
Okay, so...
We're
going to
have a problem with
ka-ching!
Panties.
when I googled Sigourney Weaver's panties, this article came up about James Cameron. James Cameron says Sigourney Weaver's strip in Alien film crossed the line. Famed filmmaker and deep sea explorer James Cameron has revealed the one scene which crossed the line, quote unquote, over the sexualization of women in film.
Wow.
And this came after the director called last year's critically acclaimed film's Wonder Woman a step backwards for women. So he was shooting his mouth off like crazy. This is from 2018. Guy doesn't know when to shut up.
I'd argue that there's an even worse scene for Sigourney Weaver and women in Alien when Ian Holm is shoving that porno mag down her throat.
You're really into talking about that scene, aren't you? I was hoping we could get by without that, but yes, it's disturbing scene. The scene in question refers to Sigourney Weaver's famous strip in one of the film's final moments. Weaver's character, Ellen Ripley, dropped her gear, quote unquote, according to Cameron, leaving the viewers watching Weaver simply, quote unquote, in her panties. For me, said Cameron, that stepped over the line. When I took over, I said, I think I can make a movie with a compelling female character who doesn't have to do that. So that's been my goal and my mission throughout. I made it my goal to make women interesting without making them sex objects. And I think I was pretty successful at doing that. Oh, do you, James Cameron? Oh, do you, director of fucking True Lies? With Jamie Lee
Say
Curtis?
It, Scott Lucas.
Jamie Lee Curtis's striptease in True Lies is one of the most gratuitous sexualizations of a major actress that I've ever seen in a major movie. So this knob's got a lot of nerve. Ben Reiser, your thoughts?
I couldn't agree more. He's an imbecile who makes good movies. But, I mean, it's silly that he doesn't get why it's such a great plot suspense point. Like,
it's silly that
making her so vulnerable and nearly naked is just great for the scene.
The what's the word?
Chutzpah.
Ah.
give me more of a with that, will you?
Chutzpah. The hypocrisy of, I mean, you know the scene I'm talking about in True Lies, right? With Jamie Lee Curtis. I mean, it's just like there is no reason for that scene to happen other than for Jamie Lee Curtis to drop her gear, quote unquote, and start writhing and gyrating around. I mean, it's ridiculous. That
crossed the line.
Yes, that quote unquote crossed the line.
That whole section of the movie is about punishing this poor Jamie Lee Curtis for supposed infidelities or whatever.
Yes. It's like, preach.
Fuck everyone in that
movie. Fuck this guy. Speaking of James Cameron, did you know that he supplied the hostage negotiator that facilitated the release of Guillermo del Toro's dad when he was kidnapped and held for ransom for 72 days? And then James Cameron brought in the hostage negotiator that got him released? Did you know that?
This was after del Toro was making movies? And
this was when, like, del Toro was... This was like in the 90s. I think he was making Mimic.
Huh.
So
his father wasn't kidnapped because del Toro was some kind of big name. It was just...
I think his father was kidnapped because of del Toro. But, I mean, it was probably back in his homeland of Spain. And he was his son's big and we're going to kidnap him. But James Cameron stepped in. They'd been buddies since the early 90s. And he stepped in and just made the whole thing happen. It's crazy, right? I guess that forgives the gratuitous Jamie Lee Curtis striptease.
And Avatar 2.
Nothing can forgive that. Ben, you got any bits this week?
No, but I did see a movie on Criterion yesterday that reminded me of you two gents again.
All right, Gabe, I can see you over there. Like, can we stop talking about movies? What do you got for us?
Yeah, what do I got? Yeah,
I sent you guys the finalized list of what do you call it? New Hall of Famers for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. You didn't even reply.
I didn't even. What was this today? You sent this.
I thought I sent it to you.
But because, again, we already talked about this, and basically everyone who was on the short list wound up in the fucking thing, right? So who cares?
Who's on this list? Who's on this list?
Everybody. Okay. Everybody who we talked about made it. It's like, why even have a Hall of Fame if you're going to put everybody in? I don't understand it.
Who do you think will get in first, Iron Maiden or the Replacements?
Replacements aren't in?
No.
What? All right. What box do they have to check for them to get into this fucking thing?
I don't know.
This is just straight up ridiculous, man. Fuck the Rock and Roll. We're not talking about this thing anymore.
I know.
Do I have a bunch? I can understand them not putting Iron Maiden in because, you know, they're a bunch of pinhead dweebs. But the one good band that you pinhead dweebs like is the fucking Replacements. And you don't even have the good sense to put them in. Fuck you fucking fucks. What a piece of shit institution run by piece of shit know-nothing imbeciles.
I'll say one thing about them not being in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Go.
It's probably a good thing because they'd get that asshole Johnny Resnick from Goo Goo Dolls to induct them. So nobody needs to see that.
I bet you they're in the Punk Rock Hall of Fame.
Uh-huh.
I don't know anything about that.
Ask Justine. She might have seen it.
She knows all about the Punk Rock Hall of Fame.
That's right.
But
didn't Big Daddy Kane assault her?
I saw a post from yours truly. Is it my truly or your truly? I don't know.
I don't know.
Yours truly is you. You know that, right?
I know, but it's not mine truly. It's Scott's truly. How would I say this? Anyway, you made a post Scott. Today.
I don't know what you're talking today. About.
You slipped in a post about the Lifers movie coming soon.
Sure.
Are you going to break some news here? What's going on?
I already broke it. Hey, everybody. It's Scott Quist. Oh.
What's up, guys?
Scott.
Hey. How you doing?
How are you doing?
I'm pretty good.
Yeah, when are you moving back to Chicago?
I haven't even been back to Chicago since the Moreno reunion.
Really? You owe some money?
2015. So that was all my family's gone. I don't have family there anymore.
Right.
Except extended family, you know, but my immediate family's all, you know, all over the place now. So
right. I remember that Moreno show, and I ruined your video, didn't I?
You remember that? You remember you?
You remember that.
Ruined my wife's video. She had it horizontal, and then you switched it to vertical. And
no. That's not what happened. She had it vertical, so I put it horizontal.
Oh, something like that. But either way, you fucked it up.
So
and she was saying, like, she's like, I said, what happened? And she said, Scott came up and flipped my phone, and. Yeah, so I'm like,
see,
right.
I didn't realize she had it, so it was locked. Yeah. So the thing would move. Because I was like,
even back then, a young Orson Welles, Scott couldn't keep his hands off the camera.
Right. Yeah. Hopefully, your movie is better with that.
His movie's going to be vertical.
Yeah.
And it's got his movie for iPhones.
It's going to flip. Halfway.
Yeah, we're going to have to cut it anyway for TikTok so Gabe can watch it.
No.
Why did you move to L.A.?
You know, it's funny because Evie from Evil Beaver, she was like, you know, there was a bunch of us. I don't even remember who else was in the mix, but she was like, let's move to L.A. I want to find bands. I want to find people who want to tour. I mean, it was hard to find people who wanted to get out on the road. And then, you know, we were just sick of the winters and the weather and all that stuff. And it sounded pretty good, and I was looking for a change, and Moreno had broken up, and I was playing with some other bands. I was working at the Vic at the time, doing the Bruinview, and Bruinview was great. Do they even do that anymore?
No, they don't. I've talked to somebody about it, though. I was like, hey, maybe you should get that going again. I'd love to program it.
Yeah.
But no, it's
not. I remember, you'd come in every once in a while. I mean, they'd be showing the same movie. The one I remember that they showed forever that for some reason was really popular was that movie About a Boy. That's the movie that sticks with me. When I see it on TV, I'm like, I immediately think of being at the Vic and running a concession stand at the Bruinview.
The one that makes me think of the Bruinview and they showed forever was Serendipity.
Okay, I don't remember that movie.
John Cusack and Kate.
Oh
Beckinsale.
Right, yeah.
And every day we got our beers and we sat down, and every time somebody said Serendipity, which was a lot, we'd scream out Serendipity and take a shot, and we were loaded by the end of that.
Yeah,
I'm
sure.
Movie. Yeah,
yeah, that was a good time, and I worked as a bar back there too, so I saw some amazing shows. I actually just found Tom Petty had done the Five Night Stand there. In 2003, he did five nights, and I found all the posters from that, and I'm gonna try and sell them, I guess. I mean, I have a bunch up. I have one in my office. I just put one up in my kids' room, and I've got like 18 more. And supposedly, I mean, who knows? You can't trust eBay, but they're supposedly like $500 a piece on eBay.
Jeez.
So I'm like, let's sell those and go on vacation. You know?
Yeah.
So you're
working there. Moreno's done. You move out to L.A.
Yeah. And before I auditioned for a couple bands and then ended up joining the Shocker.
Right.
Which was
Jennifer Finch.
Yeah. Jennifer Finch from L7, January of 2004, came out New Year's Day, did a photo shoot. A couple weeks later, we hit the road touring in Europe. And talk about like, hey, I want to move to L.A. so I can start touring. It was just hit the ground running.
Right. That's a perfect place to move so you don't have to stay there.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Right. You hit the ground running. You're touring. How long did that last?
That was for like 2.5 years from 2004 to 2006. And then it was just kind of fizzling out. And I was working at a grocery delivery place and doing the shocker. And then that's around the time I in 06 is when I started doing Real Rock and Roll Movers.
Okay. So, yeah. So did you start it?
Yeah.
Okay. You started this and it was like, was it after shocker was over? I mean, what was going on? What were you thinking?
It was just after shocker, I think, had finished, or maybe, you know what it was? I was still doing it when the shocker was going on. Cause we were touring and, my bandmate, Ronnie Elvis, he's still doing it. He's in Nashville now. He's playing with CKY. And we were just in between tours and broke like everybody is. And so I started advertising. I'd been advertising on Craigslist, just doing odd jobs, and decided to start, you know, advertising moving services on Craigslist. And so we just used the pickup truck and trailer that we used for tour.
Right.
And, you know, and just, you know, would help people move. And we just started calling ourselves Rock and Roll Movers. Right. And then there was another guy, some other guys that were advertising on Rock and Roll on Craigslist as Rock and Roll Movers. And so I remember the conversation where me and Ronnie were like, well, fuck it. We're the real Rock and Roll Movers. Like, we're actually musicians. These are just some schmoes who are calling themselves Rock and Roll. So then that's where the whole Real Rock and Roll thing was born.
I see.
Yeah. So, and just, you know, me and him at first, and then started recruiting our musician friends to help out, you know, and then eventually we got another trailer and another pickup truck and just kind of started growing it from there. So
what was the thing? What was the thing? Are you guys just sitting around getting stoned going, we should start a thing called Rock and Roll Movers? I mean, what was the genesis of
it?
No,
it was just being broke. And so again, I was doing stuff on Craigslist. Like I advertised myself as the hardworking helper. So I was doing like, pay me $15 an hour to do whatever. So I would do furniture building, which I was terrible at, like IKEA furniture building, which I still hate. And then we would do odd jobs. I remember like one time I was just literally like haul a pile of manure from the front yard to the backyard. But through
that, was
this
at Bill Maher's house?
Right. Yeah. And he, so this guy, like, who was a contractor at one of the places I was working at, liked my hustle and started having me do contractor work, and which I wasn't really very good at either and wasn't my favorite. But of all the things I liked doing, I actually liked doing the moving the most, you know, just it's very finite. It's very like, you know, you move someone into their new home and your job is done.
Yeah, and take some of the skills that you learn in a band, loading out, loading in. All
exactly.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah. Access. That's why, like, one of our taglines is access is everything, because it's just like, you know, learning how to kind of stage things out. And,
right.
You know, we call our, you know, like our paperwork is called a day sheet, like it would be on tour.
Right. Good.
You know, so and we call the guys, you know, the drivers, like the front man. Uh-huh. Of the crew, you know, kind of just started. We just had a lot of fun with tying it into being touring musicians. And when we first started it, it was like I was obsessed with the fact that it was me and Ronnie and being in a band together. Like, even after the shocker broke up, I'm like, we got to tell people we're still in a band together.
Right.
Because I just was like that. I thought that was like the key to the whole thing. You know, it's like, oh, these guys are in this band. And when they're not on tour, they help people move.
This to me is thinking. I mean, this is good, right? Right, Gabe? This is smart.
I got a thing against movers, actually.
I don't blame you. So do I.
Listen, I mean, I talked to a mutual friend, and I say, because I had to move from Chicago to the East Coast when I moved out.
It's going
to
be a long story.
Yes. Okay. It cost me $10,000 to move from the Chicago area to Charlotte, North Carolina. $10,000.
Yeah.
And they wanted it up front. They wanted it like either like 50% or 60% up front in cash.
Did they hold Chicago to Florida?
When I went to Charlotte, I went to North Carolina first. Remember?
Okay, that sounds fair, right, Scott?
I know, but yeah, but
sure.
I was gonna.
Yeah,
but I was gonna
then,
give,
right? Yeah,
I was gonna give them a card, and they were gonna run my card, and they said, "No, we need cash." This was a Saturday, and they had my truck loaded, and they were like, "You know, we're not moving until you give me cash." I'm like, ooh, what is this, a shakedown?
That's like a shakedown, yeah.
Where'd you find these guys? Craigslist?
I don't even know. But and then people were warning me.
Through his brothers.
You better do an inventory. They're going to steal your stuff, you know, yeah. All that stuff. You know, is that a big deal, a big thing?
I mean, again, like, I don't know if you, this is probably, well, did you look them up online? Because you can kind of see if that stuff exists if you find reviews online. That's
He's looking up online right now.
I was looking for a deal, but anyway, they didn't steal
well,
anything.
Well, that's the...
There you go.
That's part of it. Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, that's a common thing, like where they hold your stuff until you pay. Or they say, you know what, we want an extra $3,000 or we're not unloading your stuff.
Right.
And that stuff still happens. You'll still see, you know, I get little things from Google alerts about things that are happening in the moving industry. And it'll be about this company that, exactly what you said, like it was like a shakedown where basically like, you know, and they're not licensed. These brokers will sell it off to some random dudes.
Right. And then they'll take it. Yeah. Take it and they dump it somewhere for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And then pick it up and take it to your place. And you're like, when's it coming? It'll be there in a week. Well, I need it now. Real rock
and roll movers. It seemed like you guys, like on stage together and,
yeah,
you know, doing the Rock and Roll Movers,
yeah, we have a theme song. Yeah,
right. And it just, it's super cool because you watch it and it's like you've created this thing that's like a family and a support system for this group of musicians in a town that's notorious for being kind of pitiless, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. We definitely stood out. And it also has helped us with, you know, people who get it, appreciate that aspect of what we do. And then on top of it, the thing I've always made sure of is we got to do good work. We got to do, we can't just, it's easy to just be like, oh, there's those stoner guys who are in rock bands who help people move. And I looked up reviews online and they sucked and they broke shit and they threw my TV out the window and all that stuff. And because
that's a rock and roll mover.
Right. See, everyone asks that. They're like, so I was disappointed, you know, or they'll leave it in reviews. I was disappointed that they didn't throw my TV down the stairs and, you know. Real rock
and roll movers. Who's your craziest, biggest client that you can tell us about?
A lot we can't because we try to respect that, but we actually moved Shooter Jennings a couple times, which is very cool.
Okay.
A lot of porn stars. It's LA, so
go on. Tell us more.
Angela White, Cherie DeVille.
Okay.
Joanna Angel.
Yeah, I'm not in the porn scene anymore. I don't recognize any of these names.
Go back and just listen to this and get the names and you can look
okay,
them up later.
Yeah, I'll write them down.
Yeah, right.
Like,
yeah.
They're Ben's all in that one Fig Dish video.
Written them down.
Right. Right. Shirts Get Tight. Is that the video? Yeah.
So let's go back to the beginning. Like, you know, you're a drummer.
Yep.
Let's talk about drums. When did you start playing drums? What made you want to start playing drums?
I'm a grunge kid, man. And that hit right at the perfect age. I was, you know, 15 and Smells Like Teen Spirit comes on MTV and that was it. It was just like one of those things. And I've heard that story from a bunch of people.
Yeah.
I think even people on this show. And it's just like, you know, immediately was like, I want to do that. Yeah. And so I told my brother like, hey, you get a guitar and, you know, got some crappy Blue Sparkle kit and just started banging away in the garage and started off like lip syncing to all the songs, you know, we would just be in the garage in summertime and lip syncing to Give It Away and Pearl Jam and whatever else. And, you know, and actually my first time on stage was at I grew up in Lake Zurich.
Uh-huh.
And so we did a talent show. And we lip synced. So I did lip sync the drums to You Could Be Mine by Guns N' Roses.
Uh-huh.
And
did
that. We had a friend of ours get up as Arnold with a, you know, like a BB gun, and which you could never probably do now.
Right.
Did that.
You get a real gun now.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It'll turn it into a whole thing. Yeah. No one would expect it.
Fuck it. BB guns, no. Real guns, yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I just started playing with my brother in bands, and actually one of the first bands that we had, someone just posted some of the recordings of, like, you know, this guy hit me up. I don't know if you know this guy, Ben Kane. He was in this band, Nim, bunch of bands, and he sent me a link, and he's like, is this you guys? And I recognized the snare sound as being very distinctly you, which meant a lot, because I was like, yes, actually, that is me. That's crazy. And but anyways, yeah, we just like started putting show, you know, going to shows.
What
like,
was the name of the band?
I don't know. It's not very PC now, I guess. But well, do you remember what a Chinese fire drill was?
Yeah.
Where you get out of the car at the red stoplight.
Yeah, and so you're called Chinese fire drill.
We were called Chinese fire drill, but okay. We like our demo tape.
You were gonna like say
no. I mean, but the demo was very spot on to a Chinese fire drill.
Okay,
like literal. So
we'll stop saying it, Scott.
I know. So we eventually started doing a. We played we were called Pop Rivet, and Pop Rivet is what was like. We had a 7-inch that came out and. You know, we had a little scene in Lake Zurich and stuff. So
when do you move to Chicago and start playing with Starball?
So, you know, what's funny, before that I was playing in the Shiv, which I replaced Paul Massaro.
Yeah.
Yeah. Talk about small world stuff, which I didn't even know about until later. I just remembered, you know, there was this guy, Paul, and he used to play drums for us and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So I was playing with the Shiv, and then I'd seen Starball play somewhere, and I think right after that, they had put an ad in the Reader looking for a drummer. They were a 3-piece girl band at that time. Like it was a girl drummer, and they'd recorded with Albini. And so they advertised that they were looking for a drummer and they wanted a female. And I hit up Tamar and I was just like, hey, I don't know if you'd be open to it, but you know, I'd like to try out. And it went great. And I joined Starball. And that was fun. Cause I loved them. I saw them and was into it. So the fact that they, you know, I saw an ad in the Reader like almost immediately.
And they broke the rule.
They broke their rule for me. The first show that I did, I did dress in drag. We were playing a Halloween show at the...
I think I've seen you play with them in Pigtails before.
Yeah, yeah. Sure. Yeah. Wow, yeah. God. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, you've gone the extra mile for them.
Yeah. I'm an eyeliner and all that good stuff. So
it's cool.
Yeah. So, yeah. Man, and that was a fun time, like being in Starball, and that was when Rock 103.5 was popping off, and they were really supporting the local shows, and so we did some shows. We did they had that a rock and wrestling show that I think we played with
Beer Nuts.
Beer Nuts, yes.
Yeah, I remember that night. Yeah,
yeah. Iron Sheik was there.
Yeah, I got on air, and they were like, never put him on air again.
Thank you.
So yeah, you're in Chicago, cool. You're doing Starball, then you did Moreno.
Yeah, Moreno, yeah. And that was Moreno? I was realizing this, Moreno's the only band that didn't come from an ad that I've ever been in.
Okay, how did
like
that happen?
Everything else, I saw same type of thing. I saw them play at Thurston's, and I remember going and just they were playing in suits. And
who was playing drums
really,
for them?
This guy Kevin Martinson.
Okay,
and I think that ended up being his last show. The show that I saw was his last show.
Yeah,
and so then it was like same type of thing. I saw them play, and then I heard they were looking for a drummer, and someone connected me with Sean, and ended up playing with them, and that's still one of my favorite bands that I've ever been in. I love Sean's voice is so buttery, and you know, over that like really heavy thick. You know, I was really into Hum.
Yeah.
And, you know, so that whole thing. And like when that album came out, it was just like Pop Rivet was kind of influenced by that stuff too in like mid 90s. And so it was just like, I want to be in that band. And and it worked out. It was great. Recorded with Gerber.
And you can find those Moreno records, right?
Okay. Yeah. I think they're on Discogs and we've all got a couple laying around. And Sean's always so sweet. Like people say like, oh, I can't find it. And he's like, oh, I'll send you one.
Sean will give it to you.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like the nicest guy ever. So
yeah, I see him all the time still.
Yeah. Yeah. He's, you know, bartending his band Masonic Wave with Bruce.
They're great. Yeah.
Man. I just heard their record recently and I hit up Sean. I'm like, this is really great. And I even referenced it to I'm playing with this band Don Fades now. And I sent it to them. I'm like, I love the production on this. Like,
right.
We should think about this for a record.
Are you thinking of a new Don Fades record?
Yeah, we're getting ready to. Yeah.
Last one came out in what, 2021?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so we haven't been. That was like our COVID record. We put that out in 21. And then we haven't done too much except for recording over the last like year. We tracked drums last year. And, you know, luckily everybody's got home studios. So. Right. You know, they can just they're piecemealing everything together and, you know, flying in, sending in vocal tracks and guitar tracks. And so we're just kind of getting all that together and then we're going to mix it.
It's pretty heavy.
It's heavy, man. It's but the thing that drew me to them was it was, again, Craigslist looking for ads. And it was the only time I'd seen in LA, like people are not referencing Shiner and Failure in their music, you know, and
right.
so Sam the singer put that out and I was like, oh shit, I'm into this. But it's like that stuff with like black metal vocals basically.
Yeah,
so right. It's heavy.
Thank you.
And you're playing, what's this Heavy Cat thing that you're doing?
Oh, yeah. So I started playing with them at the end of last year, and just kind of same thing. I was just poking around on like this musician page on Facebook, and they posted looking for a drummer, and I love the record. It's really cool, like kind of psychic, garagey, psychedelic. You know, there's like a psych scene here in LA that's, you know, Brian Jonestown and all right. that kind of stuff. So, just started playing with them, and we're doing a show tomorrow night, actually, and just kind of cutting our teeth and getting everything going. And this year we're going to start doing, you know, bigger shows. And,
okay. So you're in two real bands that, you know, you're not playing covers. You're not fucking around.
No, I can't. I'm not there yet. I'm not at the cover point yet. You know,
it's like, easy. Some of us are.
Well, I'm going to throw in a third cover band at some point, but
sure. You know, so you get two bands and you're doing Rock and Roll Movers, and it seems like you've got everything figured out.
Yeah, it's been going good, you know. Got a family, got two kids. Both are into the music. You know, my one son Cole is playing drums.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I saw that, yeah.
Yeah, and he's been doing that, and my other son, they're both really into GarageBand, like making songs on GarageBand. They're both gamers. Like they've been very, you know, dad's music is just loud and obnoxious.
Yeah.
And so now they're starting to get into Green Day and stuff. So my kid the other day remade American Idiot on just with instruments on GarageBand. He's 10, you know, and he just did, you know, so, and he just did like a piano for the melody, you know, so it's actually pretty cool to see them like making music and mixing it and playing it in different places and listening to it. And
send it to Ben. We'll throw it in the episode.
I will. That'd be funny, actually.
Speaking of the porn industry, mm-hmm. We'll talk about something in your past that you might not want to talk about, but used to be the drum tech for Local H.
I did.
Yeah.
How does that a segue? That doesn't make sense.
It's a pretty good one.
You like porn, Gabe. That's what it is. We're bringing it back to that.
That's been cut out.
So,
you
remember that?
Those were fun times. I had a lot of firsts with you guys.
it was the Here Comes the Zoo tour.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And you had the most important job. You were in charge of the fog machine.
I was the fog guy. I still love fog, and it's thanks to you guys.
Even after that.
Because
you know, there were a lot of clubs. So what would happen is we'd play the last song, and we'd play What Would You Have Me Do? And we'd play one chord for a half an hour.
Yeah.
And once that chord started, it was Scott's job to start hitting the fog machine. Yeah. And I mean, it was so Spinal Tap.
It was relentless.
It was there were clubs that we
Chain Reaction. You remember Chain? So it's, I have no appreciation for it because I'm here, but right. I remember Chain Reaction. You could not see a few feet in front of your face. I remember like one of the things was like they would open the doors at the end of the night and it would just be people and fog just billowing out of the front door of the venue.
But and it was sometimes crazy. Whatever was in the fog would like sort of like snow like on the floor.
Yeah.
You know?
It would cake on things.
Right.
Yeah.
Somebody would be a little sticky. Just dumped cocaine everywhere. And it was and there's a lot of these clubs that would not let us back. For years, some of them we still haven't been back to.
Really? This is like a guar thing. Like
it was,
you guys messed up.
Yeah, we kind of
instead of blood. It was.
There was a couple of clubs at the end of the night to be like, look what you did to our club. And I was like, hey man, it's just a fog machine.
I we have fog in Dawn Fades, and I'm responsible for the fog machine as well. I've got a little key thing that sits on my hi-hat that I just press. Just for a little bit of, you know, a little haze throughout the set.
Right.
So I think that might have started with you guys, you know, love of fog.
Well, I don't have that love of fog anymore after that tour. But but sometimes you couldn't get it to work. And it was like, and that would be the Spinal Tap thing. We'd get in these fights about it. Because I'd be out there playing this chord and be like, here it comes. And nothing would come. Yeah. And I'd be like, hey, Scott, where's that fog? When's it coming out?
Why can't I see everything? And
you'd be over there like, I can't get it to work.
Yeah.
I'm like, fuck this.
Sometimes that just wouldn't work. Yeah. And I'd be panicked because, yeah, you would get pissed off about it.
Yeah.
You guys were both very angry men at that point. I will say, I mean, I don't know if that's changed, but Brian would just turn around because I was always sitting on a stool behind him. Uh-huh. And he would just turn around and like do this head motion. He'd have me changing cymbals in the middle of the set.
Right.
Like I'd be up there trying to avoid the stick because he wouldn't even stop. Like he would, and it would just be me trying to get the wing nut off and swap out cymbals and yeah, it was a good time.
Yeah.
Have you guys, by the way, have you guys talked about the bus accident on the show at all? Remember the bus accident?
I don't think so. Where we had all those people come on the bus?
Yeah, on the way to Omaha.
No. What do you remember about
it? That was crazy. I remember being probably the most hungover drunk I've ever been because we'd been up drinking Makers all night and being really sick. And then just everybody rolling around. I think somebody fell out of the bunk or something. But I just remember, I think there was a truck that had jackknifed. We're in a snowstorm. Yeah. And a pickup truck had run into that truck. I remember I was the first one off the bus. And I just remember being so sick and not knowing what had happened. But I think the driver would manage to get us into a ditch. And then the trailer swung around and slammed against the side of the bus. And that's what, like, you know, rolled us all out.
Right.
And I remember coming out and just being so out of it and seeing actually like the guy through the windshield. The guy in the pickup truck had gone through the windshield.
Yeah.
And then a trooper comes up and he's like, get back on the bus. It's the safest place. So I remember throwing up and then getting back on the bus. All of us sitting there and then they were pulling victims because they were like, hey, we got a bus here.
Right.
So there's like kids coming in with glass in their hair and bloody.
Right.
And families and all these people.
Bunch of families in the bus. It became this, like, everybody go up there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just remember, wait, how did it go? You, they're like, where were you guys headed? And, like, people were trying to make small talk with us, you know, family stuff. And you're like, straight to hell. I just remember that line. That will always stick to me.
Scott's good with the kids.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Made everyone feel good, safe.
Did you make the show?
We did. It's actually online. That show is online. And we made it late, but it was one of those like.
Where were we headed?
The show must go on.
Straight to hell.
We were close straight to hell or Omaha, which, you know, whatever you would call it.
We were going to Omaha, so.
Yeah. The Ranch Bowl. Remember the Ranch Bowl?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Oh, I remember. Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gabe loves the Ranch Bowl.
Some great shows at the Ranch Bowl. Oh, wow.
Yeah. That place was cool. We played there with the Shocker a couple times, too, and always made me think of that story.
All right. How about this story? Do you remember tech school?
I do. I've heard you guys talk about it, and I've always thought, like, I would love to give my version of that story.
To your version of tech school. Give us the full version of tech school.
I think it was Johnny Polonsky's idea, right? Or was it Mike's? I can't remember whose idea it was, but I know Mike put it into motion.
Uh-huh.
I guess I heard, you know, about it later. It was like,
so something had happened in
something
Madison.
I didn't remember it was Madison. Okay. So yeah, something had happened at the show and Josh, I don't know if you like talking about Josh, he's whatever, but
it's fine.
Josh, I think, had messed up something and it was like, you guys need to go to fucking tech school.
Right.
And so we're like, yeah, whatever. And so then I think Mike came to us and there's this whole story of Herbie Hancock started this school for roadies.
That was my idea.
That was you?
Because Herbie Hancock had that thing on the, like, I don't know, electric company or something, where it was rock school. No, Herbie Hancock was part of the, there was a show, a TV show on PBS called Rock School, I believe. And Herbie Hancock was involved with it. So that's where the Herbie Hancock thing came from.
Yeah, I remember and we didn't believe you guys. I remember everyone said, like, Johnny was like, telling all these stories about, oh, it's this legendary place. And that's where they send people to learn how to change strings and, you know, tune drums and all this stuff. So
sounds great.
It sounds great, you know, except that.
And this is on our day off.
So this is our day off. Yeah.
A couple days after this gig that had gone really badly.
Yeah.
I don't remember if it was Scott or if it was this junkie that had messed up. But somebody had fucked up. And
Mike came to us and was like, I enrolled you guys in this class tomorrow morning and it starts at 8:00 and they part of it is you learn how to repair an amp. So we're going to make you have to bring a matchless head.
Yeah.
And we're bring one of the heads.
He's making him bring the heaviest head that we had.
Yes.
He made him bring the matchless head.
Yeah.
And we're like, don't worry, we're going to pay for you guys. We'll pay the tuition. It's okay.
And we didn't believe you guys until we wake up and there's a cab sitting out in front of the bus. And I just remember Josh like taking a swig of Makers and being like, fuck it. And like,
fuck it.
So we're just like, you know, all right, let's do this. But I do remember the night before, like everybody talking this whole thing up. And apparently I think Mike had just talked to a college kid so he could get some, like, who'd gone to a local college so he could get like a real classroom name and a teacher to ask for. And then Eddie was involved in it too.
Yeah.
And he's like, you guys got to do this. It's important. And we're like, oh my God, you're kidding me. So yeah, we're both hungover and we go to the front, get dropped off by the cab, and we go to the front and we're like, hey, we're looking for the tech class, tech school. They're like, tech school? What? I don't know. Go to the front, you know, go to this person, talk to this person.
Carry this 100-pound amp head around.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. We're both, it's like planes, trains, and automobiles with us. Like, you know, instead of, it's just put an amp in it, which I think I've actually seen that meme somewhere where people are carrying an amp. So,
right.
Yeah, and we're just like driving around and we're calling or walking around this campus. Does anyone know where tech school is? You know, and I think it sounded enough like something that could exist that people were like, oh, you know, I think it might be over in that building. You know, people who didn't even know. And we're calling Eddie. And then what? I think he was calling you guys because we were like, fuck this. We're quitting. Like, we're done.
We're not. Eddie was starting to freak out because he's like, you know, I don't have time for this. And I'm like, yes, you do.
It was an involved prank. I don't know if you guys had ever had anything that involved before.
It was elaborate. It was. Yeah. It was really something else, and it just kept getting better and better.
Yeah.
Because you guys went with it and you went for it, and then you committed to it on your end without
you guys going. Committed to it on your end, and it was like, well, we got to keep our jobs, you know, like we're gonna. We're going to do this, I guess. Hey, maybe we could learn a thing or two and, you know, and
they're paying for it.
Yeah. And I just remember, you know, what's funny is coming back off of that, I ended up pulling a prank on Mike because you guys had your collection of hot sauces. And do you remember this? So he was watching the merch table and I was like, man, are you hungry? Like, do you want something? And he's like, yeah. You know, I'm like, hey, man, I'm going to go make you a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. So, and I'm not someone who does pranks. Like, I was just so pissed. And of course, I'm, you know, going to take it out on someone. So, yeah, I went back and made him a peanut butter sandwich with jelly and hot sauce. And I just loaded the sandwich with hot sauce. And then gave it to him. And he was so appreciative, you know? And
thank you.
And so he takes a big bite, and I still remember, like, his face just lighting up red and glowing and, like, realizing it. And he was chasing me around, and then he puked in the bushes. Whoa. And he was, like, he was fucked up from it. I felt really bad.
Right.
And I remember telling you that, like, oh, man, I think I went too far. And you're like, you can't go too far. Like, own it. Like, it's okay. You know, it's a good getting him back. So
Oh, those were the days. Oh,
yeah, man. That was
so
fun.
How did you find out that tech school was, do you remember how you found out that it was a complete fallacy?
I think Eddie finally gave you guys
couldn't
up
take it anymore.
And was just like, you know what? Wait, maybe. No, you know what I think it was? I think we actually just gave up and said, we can't find it. And he was just like, all right, come on back. Actually, now I remember. Because I remember the whole ride back, we thought we had just still couldn't find it. We weren't in on the joke. And we came back and walked on the bus, and all of you guys were just rolling on the ground. You and Polanski and Brian and just dying laughing. And we were like, fuck you guys. Like, I can't believe it. Just didn't seem feasible that it could be that it could be a joke. And yeah, you guys really... You guys pulled it off.
You guys are like, to Mike, you're like, what? You called the fucking school? You got them in on it?
There were so many details. Like, that's the thing about a good prank is the details. And you guys had all the details. There's, names to ask for, room numbers to go to,
It checked out. Our story checked out.
Yeah, it did. Yeah. It was brutal, but, a good memory. And like I had never smoked a cigarette. You found that out and you're like, here, you guys smoke a cigarette. I never smoked weed. You and Mike were making me a little bong bowl out of tin foil.
All right. That's enough. You're going to get me arrested. Gabe, I think he knows what you're going to ask him.
But before we get to this, what's this Kevin Hart video with you guys in the real Rock and Rollers? Did you see that, Scott?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Is that for real? Scott. Oh, we got two Scotts.
Yeah.
What is this thing? I mean, how'd you get this thing going?
They called us. He had his production company that was, he's always doing something,
So Kevin Hart has some kind of reality show? What's going on?
He was doing this show called What the Fit, and it was basically alternate ways of working out, like finding ways to be in shape through just daily activities. So, they hit us up and we're like, we're looking for an LA moving company and you're kind of like the quintessential LA moving company. And we wanted to have Kevin be a mover for a day.
Yeah.
And then they told us like, oh yeah. And his guest is going to be Pete Davidson, which was just the funniest, tallest guy, shortest guy.
Yeah.
And the only thing I said was like,
the funniest guy, unfunniest guy. It's a thing of opposites.
Which is which?
I really did a good job driving.
That's the last car I would ever think of you to get
out
of.
Can you get by?
The Rock and Roll Movers.
Someone's at the door.
How
look natural. Hey, look natural.
Yeah, what up?
Holy shit!
Oh, cool.
How are you?
Hello. Hi, how are you?
What's your name?
Cheryl.
How are you, Cheryl?
Hi, I'm Skylar.
Skylar is my friend Pete right here.
Cheryl.
Come on, you're engaged to Ariana Grande.
Yes, I am. I'm Mr. Grande.
Oh, my God.
It's me, the new Kevin Federline. How are you?
Awesome. We are helping you guys move. All right. We're embracing this. We are here as helping hands.
It's a very nice home.
Oh, thank you.
See a lot of memories were had here.
Yes. 20 years almost.
You have a dad. That's cool.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
What's that
like?
And I think that they were actually, the family was disappointed that it was Kevin Hart and not like, they thought Gene Simmons or somebody, because it was Rock and Roll Movers. They knew it was Rock and Roll Movers. They thought some rocker guys were going to show up.
Right.
And at that time, Pete Davidson was engaged to Ariana Grande.
Mm.
So if you watch the episode, they're like, they recognized him.
Is she the one that used to lick ice cream?
Probably.
I hate her.
Yeah, I'm not a fan. So they just hired us to, or asked us to be part of it. And, I got to say, it was one of those things where I was expecting some big influx of customers that came from it. And that stuff doesn't, it's entertaining for
people
to watch.
No,
it didn't translate. We've had that a couple times. Like we were doing, the version of the loop out here is 95.5 KLOS. Right. And we did an ad campaign on there as like the official rockin' movers of the rock station, KLOS, and did a whole ad campaign. And same thing, it didn't really translate, to too much. So, but it's cool to do. And it's, I get people like that. My neighbor, I overheard him telling some someone that was at his house, like, you know, Real Rock and Roll Movers, and then all of a sudden I heard Kevin Hart and blah blah blah, and people like talking about that part of it, and it's got like 10 million views or something on on YouTube. Yeah. So,
Gabe, I don't know where this is going to go. I think you might have a winner.
We're overdue. So, Scott,
I think you might have one on your.
We'll see. We'll see. We ask our guests every week. We try to. If you had to choose, and you can only pick one of two bands, you can listen to one band only.
Listen to him milk it.
Yes. between Iron Maiden or The Replacements, who would you pick?
So I listened to your show, so I knew this question was coming. And the problem is that I don't have like a relationship with either one of those bands.
Uh-huh.
Like, fine. You know, like where, so like where, I don't know, bands that you're a fan of, but you're like, I've never, an old guitar player said that to me once. He's like, I had a relationship with that album or whatever. Right. And I was like, that's actually a really good way to say it. So, but I was like thinking porn. About it.
Yes, it does.
Exactly.
It sounds like he should be arrested.
So, but I feel like I got to go with Maiden.
Oh!
Mainly because.
Oh, yes, you do. As everybody
I do.
Does.
As everybody that, does. That Flight 666 movie, did you ever see that?
Oh, yep.
You want me to go get the Blu-ray?
Oh man, it's I loved that movie and loved the whole idea of it, and also I think my guys, I got a lot of metalheads that work for me and like have Iron Maiden coolers and stuff. I think they'd hate me if I didn't choose them. And The Replacements, I've always had that issue that other people talked about with the production on Replacement stuff. Like I like heavy, you know.
Yeah.
I like, you know, driven stuff with.
All right.
You know, so
have you heard the remix of Tim?
That's my choice. No, I heard everyone talking about it, but
here's a real question for you, Scott.
Yeah.
What can you tell us about E-Trope?
E-Trope? I don't even know what that is.
That's not Scott's scene.
Is this too inside for what's E-Trope?
You got something? It's a little
Chicago street metal.
Yeah, it's not really your thing.
Freak metal?
Street metal.
Oh,
street metal.
Street metal. Like,
metal from 80s, the street.
80s, early 90s.
What is Chicago street metal? I never know what you guys are talking about when you say that.
That's what they say. That's their branding on their record, Chicago street metal.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
It's
true.
I don't know them, but I mean, it's funny because
they
didn't
call
have...
themselves E-Tro. What do you think their branding is going to be like?
With a silent Z.
You know, it's funny.
And apparently a silent O as well.
Yeah, that's, it might be before my time. I don't know.
Yeah, but it's definitely before your time. I didn't want to say that, but it is. So you know what goes on here. We're talking about doing a What's the Best?
Yes. And I've been.
So the question is, what's the best? What's the best?
What's the best? What's the best? What's the best?
Yeah, you say you listen to the show. What's the best? What's the best?
Yeah, I'm not a student enough to be able to pick that one. So,
all right. But, so the office. Mm-hmm. I picture you all sitting around singing "Money for Nothing." You know that ain't working.
Right, yeah.
You know. So we figured we'd do the best songs about working for a living. What's the best?
Yeah. Right?
You down with this idea?
I am. And it's funny because it's like a lot of them are kind of the most obvious ones at this point.
All right. Let's do what's the best songs about working for a living.
All right.
What's the best? I don't know. Here we go. What's the best? What's the best? So that means you're first, Scott.
Okay.
I'm second. Ben is third. And Gabe's last, right?
That's fine.
I think you were second last week, but all right.
So we picked.
I was second behind Gabe. Gabe was second. I was third.
Oh, he was.
You were last, remember?
Okay. Right. Okay. Yes.
So we pick the three songs.
So you pick one at a time.
How does it work again?
Okay. So you pick one at a time. So you pick a song, and then I'll pick a song. And you should have more than three in case one of us steal one of your ideas.
Got it.
But you get first pick. Now, don't mess this up. We're counting on you. First pick, Scott.
Go. I mean, the one that's been running through my head all day now, after kind of thinking about this, is Working Man.
Oh!
By Rush. I mean, you got to go with that. All the riff right. just starts out. And
I'm not even mad at you for taking it. I mean, that is just...
I mean, I was assuming that would probably be on everybody's list.
It was number one on my list.
Yeah.
Gabe?
Yeah.
It's on my list. I didn't think I'd be able to get it, so I didn't count
on it. Ben, was it on your list?
It was not.
Ben's going to pick Sufjan Stevens' work all day. I don't know which Ben's got up his sleeve, but whatever.
No, I'm sure there's plenty of work songs that I don't know. But
right, but Working Man is the best. I mean, you know. I was going to say best songs about the working man, but, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, that's a great song. Yeah, it's a great song.
Is that your favorite Rush song?
I don't know. You know, I remember when you guys were doing the Rush covers live, mm-hmm. and what's funny is, again, like, I have weird things that I don't have connections to. So Rush, of course, exists in, you know, my world, but... I didn't have an AC/DC phase until I was in my late 30s. I didn't, you know, have a Led Zeppelin phase until later. And I mean, hell, my kid is 13. He's already going through his AC/DC phase. He's like way into AC/DC. He loves it.
Yeah, well, we want our kids to be smarter than we are.
Yes.
And sounds like that's what's happened.
Yeah. Yeah. He's on a good, path. So,
yeah.
Okay. So.
Okay, so now it's my turn.
Oh, so now you go. Got it.
Now I go. Yes, it's my turn. I'm going 9 to 5, ladies. Let's do it. 9 to 5.
Left.
Yeah. Yeah, that was on my list.
That was on your list there, Gabe?
Mm-hmm.
Is that my list? Of course.
Who doesn't? You look a little disappointed.
I'm not going to make it. I'm going to need to get some more songs.
That's a good one. Have you ever seen the movie 9 to 5, Scott?
Of course. The question is, has Gabe seen it? Because Gabe doesn't
see
anything.
That one. I've seen it plenty of times.
Plenty of times.
What's the bald-headed guy's name, the boss?
Dabney Coleman.
Dabney Coleman,
He's not really that bald.
He plays a bald man every time.
He plays a balding man.
Yeah.
They're all bald. Balding is the same thing.
He's balding.
Dabney
Coleman's the best.
We've had three bald guys on the show for weeks now, and now Scott's got some hair, I think.
Yeah, I got hair. It's all matted down, but a little
now
gray.
Now we're entering our Scott phase. We have nobody on the show except people named Scott.
Right.
Oh, yeah, you guys had a Scott on last week, right?
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
So whose turn is it now? Is it Ben's turn?
Yeah, I'm going Working for the Clampdown by the Clash.
Ooh. Oh,
that's a good one.
That's a good one.
Nice.
Wasn't on my list, but it's a good one.
Yeah, I didn't have that either.
And he went straight for it. Like, he didn't, like, do a long story about what his pick was. Ben just went straight for it tonight.
At some point over the last 3 years, nobody really gives a shit about anything I have to say on this show, so I'll just power through. It's a revelatory episode.
Is there going to be a Ben show where we just... Everyone else shuts up and Ben just talks.
Yeah. Yes, but then I'll get a hold of it and
chop the shit out of it. Right. Yeah.
Right.
It'll be a 5-minute episode.
Good pick. Everybody's had good picks so far. This is top drawer stuff. Gabe.
It's good.
What do you got?
I was going to pick this one song because I knew it was about work, but I looked up the lyrics. It's not about work. So it doesn't really count.
What is it? Oh,
Big Daddy Kane, get the job done. But that's not about work.
Okay, so you're not going to do that one.
I can't take it, but it's an honorable mention.
Okay. That's a good one.
I think it's the first time Big Daddy Kane has come up on the show.
It might be the last.
Is that the one that's like, you better work? No, no, there's a work. Isn't that Big Daddy Kane?
Yeah, he does say, I work, I get the job done.
Yeah, right, yeah, I work, yeah.
But he's talking about getting the job done in a different manner.
Right,
anyway.
Sure.
Yeah. He's having a relationship with an album, with a record store.
Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I'll pick a song that was written by somebody who is no longer with us.
Oh.
And because I looked up the list of top working songs, I'm going to pick Manic Monday.
Whoa. Yeah. All right, what's the lyric about working?
I can't think of it right now. Look at that.
Come on.
Raspberry Beret would be about working.
He was he was working part-time in a 5 and dime. His boss, by the way, was Mr. McGee. Seems he told him several times that he didn't like his kind because it seems he was a bit too leisurely. One day he was doing something close to nothing, no different than that time before. That's not the song you want to do, though, Gabe, is it?
Manic Monday. I picked it.
All right, is there anything about working? Because if there's one thing that...
Listen, you have to catch an early train, got to be at work by 9.
Okay. Yeah, I had that. I had that.
Okay, it's for real.
Yeah, yeah. Right. It's not that far off.
Okay.
It's to my work.
Great pick, Gabe. All right. I'm just surprised you didn't pick a Minor Threat song.
No. I don't have any this week.
All right, great. Scott, right. It's back to you.
Wait. Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. So my second pick is Working Man Blues by Merle.
Wow. Yeah.
And my wife is a big blues girl. So she was, I was thinking about different songs. She's like, about that song. I'm like, oh, yeah, of course.
There's a lot
working
of
man blues. Blues. Yeah.
Yeah.
Blues and country. Like, I threw this out to my staff just to see, like, a couple guys that were here. I'm like, what's some good working songs?
And so you got some help.
I got a little. These ones.
Nobody said Money for Nothing?
Money for Nothing came up.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know if that's on anyone's list or if that's
we'll find out.
Spoil anymore.
Yeah, okay. Save we won't say anymore. All right. So
that's just too obvious because that song really is about moving.
Yeah.
You got to move and store these microwave ovens. I mean, that should be. That should be your. Not you have an official theme song, but that should be your unofficial. If you had a TV show, it starts with Rock and Roll Movers, but it ends with Money for Nothing. Money I don't know. I'm just spitballing here.
Hey, who knows? It might be a documentary.
Or maybe it starts with Money for Nothing and then it ends with the Rock and Roll Movers.
Yeah. Let's see if we can get
that idea.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see if we can get the budget in the documentary for a Dire Straits song.
You get the budget, you start it with Money for Nothing, and then you end with Rock and Roll Movers. Credits roll. Perfect.
I like it. I like it.
What song did you pick again?
Working Man Blues by Merle Haggard.
Oh, okay, that's right. Okay.
That's the one with the little tink with the what's the lyrics? I can't sing, so I'm not even gonna try and sing that one, but you guys know this song, right? Or is this okay, yeah. All right.
We're listening to it right now.
Okay.
Okay, so it's my turn. And I'm doing it. Gabe, I'm taking it.
I don't know what you're taking.
Blue Collar Man by Styx.
Ooh,
I got
I'll take it.
To be a Blue Collar Man. Come on.
I don't even.
Give it to me.
I didn't have that one on there.
It's
a Blue Collar Man.
It's explicitly about sitting on the waiting on the unemployment line. He's got to be a blue collar man. It's good stuff. I don't care what you say. Sticking with it.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Jerk Store. I'm sticking with it.
Styx made its way onto the podcast.
Not for the first time.
Not the first time. You know it's you, Gabe.
Oh, that's right. Oh,
Gabe, I love you. Whose turn is it?
Well, Scott, you mentioned 9 to 5, and I was going to do this Ramones song. It's not my place in the 9 to 5 world, but I realize that's about not working or not being in the 9 to 5 world, so... I'm going to go for the obvious, but I do love this song. I don't know if anybody else here does. Taking Care of Business.
Yeah!
BTO. Oh, I hate this song.
Ben takes one for the team. Oh, man. Remember when we were playing that show in Chicago when we were a three-piece, Gabe, and Russ Bucket got on our instruments and started playing Taking Care of Business?
Is that at the Avalon?
No, it was at some like weird artsy loft party.
I was like, way back.
Fuck you, artsy
way back,
loft
yeah.
People.
I was going to say.
That's way back.
You act all artsy and then you're in Taking Care of Business. Let's get the fuck out of this place.
Is that part of the Guess Who Bachman Turner Overdrive? Are they related?
No.
I thought they were.
GTFO.
No, there's a guy from the Guess Who names is Bachman.
Randy Bachman?
I don't know their names, but they're from Canada. Isn't BTO from Canada? Come on.
BTO. Do you know what that stands for?
Bachman Turner Overdrive.
That's right.
But are they from Canada? That's the question.
Who knows?
Who does American band?
Canadian rock band, Winnipeg.
American Randy. Woman is a Canadian band, yes. Oh, okay. That's the Guess Who.
Right.
Oh, who does American, we're an American band? That's Grand Funk Railroad.
Randy Bachman.
It is true that those three bands are interchangeable in my mind, but I don't know why.
I can see that.
I can see that too.
I can see that.
All right, I'm going to pick one.
Yeah.
All right, Gabe.
And Scott brought up Merle Haggard, and I thought this song was Merle Haggard my whole life until today when I looked it up.
Oh, shit.
Because he's got the same beard.
Oh, man. Johnny Paycheck and shove it. Yeah.
Yep.
I could have looked at his face and said that is Merle Haggard, but it's not.
That's that. I'm sure that happens all the time because Johnny Paycheck is, you know.
Merle Haggard's not as crazy as Johnny Paycheck was. Right. Johnny Paycheck was a wild man.
I don't know anything about him, except he looks like Merle Haggard.
In a field of wild mans, that guy was super scary.
He looks it.
Oh, that's a great pick, Gabe.
You didn't have it? You didn't
really
have it?
Good one. I forgot about it.
How
I'm
can
sorry
you?
To say. You'll kill me? Is that what you said?
How can you forget? It's okay. Take this job and shove it.
I thought you said, I'll kill you.
I don't know if that's one that I want my guys running around saying, like, singing, though, you know?
No, we'll cut this part. We'll cut this part out, Scott. Don't worry about it.
It's like the one of my extra ones was Big Boss Man, which I think Elvis did it most famously, but it's like, you know, you're just tall, that's all. Like just just kind of an F you to the Big Boss Man, which everybody calls me Boss Man, so I don't want that.
I've seen that. Yeah, you don't want to mess with that.
Mm-mm, no.
All right, your final choice on the board.
All right, so this was running through my head now, thinking about it. She Works Hard for the Money.
Wow, great one.
Donna Summers.
That's a great one. Yeah.
So you better treat her right.
That's right.
That's a good one. And that's, again, been running through my head now all day.
An anthem.
Heavy. I can see where you came up with that. Super heavy. That thing is practically black metal.
You could do that. Yeah, you could. Right, She works hard for the money.
There's that a cover more that like can Springsteen. Go on the list. Right, yeah, exactly.
Springsteen's money.
So, yeah.
It's an anthem.
She works hard for the money.
Every time Donna Summer put out a song, it became an anthem.
True.
She's
and it's a disco thing. You know, it's funny, I have appreciation for speaking of like disco, like but ABBA, thanks to you, because on that tour,
yes,
we would start every night, like basically the set change before you guys went on was the ABBA Gold record.
ABBA Gold, yeah.
And I remember there was like a certain point in that record where if that song was coming on, we were taking too long to get set up.
Right.
Like
yeah.
One thing about you guys, you were set, you were really on about like your start time. Like if the set time was 10 o'clock, why are we not on? Why are we not on? Like 10 o'clock, you guys were.
It's you know,
I got it.
I mean, it.
Yeah,
it's
you're professionals.
Well, we also respect other people's time. You know, the audience showed up. They got other stuff to do. You know, you know, like when the thing I always hated. You talk to a band, like, what time are you going on? Oh, we're going on at 9. And you show up and it's like, hey, you didn't go on until 9:45. Oh, we just tell people that so they'll get there early. I'm like, well, guess who's not coming next time? Me, fucker.
I don't trust you.
No, I don't trust that shit. All right, it's my turn. Ooh, this was a tough one. This was a tough one. I'm doing it. 22 Acacia Avenue by Iron Maiden.
What, the oldest profession? Does that count?
That's right. The oldest profession counts.
Wasn't on my list. I wasn't thinking that way.
What are you going to... You're going to shame sex workers? You don't think this belongs, Gabe?
That's not really working for the man.
Charlotte the Harlot.
It is working for the man.
Yeah.
Right?
Not the man, but it's the man.
Yeah.
It's a different man.
I don't think Charlotte has a pimp. Does she have a pimp? In 22 Acacia Avenue? I don't think so.
There was never a mention of a pimp, no.
No. No. It was either this or Roxanne. And I decided for my good buddy Gabe, he's having a good night. He's having a very good Iron Maiden night. 22 Acacia Avenue. Just take it, Gabe.
I'll take it.
Hey, it's Iron Maiden. You got to take it.
Would you say, Gabe?
It wasn't even on my list, on my radar at all. But
didn't even think of it, did you?
I was thinking Working Man for some reason the whole time. Working Man.
Shame
Working
on man.
You. I know. We're too male-centric on the show. We need to get some more... I see.
Yeah.
She works hard for the money. You got to get some.
Yeah. You got 9 to 5. I try to spread it around.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
You got Manic Monday.
I was looking at our podcast stats.
Charlotte the Harlot spreads it around. Go ahead.
And our two most popular episodes are both female guests. So Gabe's right. We got to get some more ladies on the show.
Who are they?
Louise Post and Juliana Hatfield.
Yeah. Listen. I'd like to have more women on the show. They don't want to be on the show. I can't have this conversation anymore. Who's next? Is it?
It's me. Ben? So I can't. We can't get through this without me picking a song from The Boss, right? It's previously mentioned by Scott Lucas.
There's you just say.
You know, all of his songs are a chore.
I was just going to say. Yeah.
They're all work.
So there's more overt Springsteen songs about work, I guess, but I'm picking my favorite of them, The River by Bruce Springsteen.
What are the lyrics to that? I don't even know.
Got a job working construction for my 19th birthday. Got a union card and a wedding coat. He's all over.
It's like Springsteen AI. Got a job working construction, got my union card, got my lunch pail, let's go to work.
That's right. He's so iconic that it's easy to do Springsteen AI.
Yeah.
He owns it, motherfuckers.
Oh,
mother fathers.
He sure does.
Mother fathers.
Mother fathers, yeah. Well done. Well done, Ben. Great callback. Gabe, it's up to you, man.
This might be the only song with a cowbell about work. Can you think
Hold on.
Are you going to do Todd Rundgren?
No, he's going to do so another Canadian band.
No, not Canadian, but they're not American either.
You're not doing Working for the Weekend?
That's what I was going to say. Is it Working for the Weekend?
Is there a cowbell in there?
I thought there was. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Boom. It starts with a cowbell. Yeah. This is a cowbell in the chorus or the pre-chorus, if you want to call it that. Mm. You'll never guess.
Mm.
Our buddy.
Can't guess. What?
Not our buddy, but let's go. Hard Day's Night.
Yeah, okay, that's a good one. It's funny that I didn't even think of that.
You think of that? You think of cowbell when you think of that song?
I don't. Yeah,
yeah.
It's in the pre-chorus. It's been a hard day's night. I've been working like a dog. That's it.
Man, a Beatles song hasn't been on the list in a while. It's nice. I've missed them. It's nice to have them back. You guys know next week Disney is going to start showing the original Let It Be.
Are they?
Yeah.
Why?
They're
releasing it. Remastered? Remastered and better?
Of course. Cleaned up.
Yeah, but it's not 4 hours like the one we saw before or whatever?
No, it's
the
movie.
That was longer than 4 hours.
It's the movie.
Oh, not the Get Back, right?
So Get Back is about the making of Let It Be. Now, Let It Be is the movie that they were making.
Okay.
So and why would you is the thing that's been out of circulation for years. When I was a kid, I was able to check out like a bootleg video of it from the library, but that was it, you know, and I haven't been able to see this movie, and I never thought we'd see it until after Paul McCartney died. And then this Get Back thing was a shock to me, but it was such a huge hit that McCartney's like, okay, now everyone knows that I'm not the bad guy. Put this thing out. So it's coming out next week, and I couldn't be more excited.
All right.
Aren't they doing a director's cut of the Get Back movie?
I think that is the director's cut.
Or is that a joke?
I think eight hours is enough. Yeah, like, I think that might be the joke.
How long does that correct thing? You slightly? Yeah. Because Get Back is all the footage that they shot for Let It Be, and then they carved Let It Be out of that footage. It's not like Get Back was the making of Let It Be.
Yes, it is.
Well, in the sense that anytime you pull footage from a documentary, you could say, well, this is the making of that documentary.
That's what I'm saying.
Well, that's stupid, but all right. So you can have it.
Did you say that was stupid? Well, Scott, it was... good to see you. Good
yeah,
to have
man,
you.
It was good to see you. Yeah, I've been stoked since last night to be on this. We've got a lot long history actually, and I love you guys. I love what you guys are doing here, and you know.
Well, we love what you're doing, and I've been thinking about it for a while. Like I was like, this story is great, and just the whole idea and what you've done is pretty awesome.
I appreciate that because you lose sight of it sometimes, and it's like the day to day of, you know, owning a moving company. If I would have known, I probably wouldn't have started a moving company. You know, like it's not like I set out to go, you know, hey, what do you want to do? I'm going to start a moving company, but just kind of fell in my lap and I made it work. And now I support a family on it and all that stuff, which is,
right.
is exciting. You know, it's cool. I mean, and I always kind of thought of it as an extension of like a band, you know, like I was like, we got to do flyers and we got to get a theme song and we got to make stickers. And then I can still play music and enjoy right. what I'm doing.
You have know. To play music. I mean, the whole thing is set up that, yes, that's what I do. I play music and I do yeah. this. Yeah.
Yeah. All my office
You're
guys
Sultan
are
Sultan of
are
Swing.
That's another good one. Yeah.
How come you didn't pick that one, Gabe?
I'm not a Dire Straits fan.
Come on. Check out Guitar George. He knows all the chords. But it's strictly rhythm. He doesn't want to make a crier sing.
Are these lyrics that I don't know? Real rock.